This is Board of Directors, Elizabeth School District Board of Directors meeting, Monday, August 22nd, 2022, working session. And I call this meeting to order at 6 o'clock. Right. Roll call, please.
Director Bacham.
Here.
Director Booth.
Aye.
Director Krupp.
Here.
Director Fletcher.
Here.
Director Olson.
Here.
All right.
Okay, well, for President Karcher and the rest of the board, it's my privilege and honor to invite Ms. Janet Schneider and Ms. Robin Hunt up here to the podium to introduce a fantastic student from Running Creek Elementary School who is going to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance and be recognized formally for us. So if you would introduce our young
Yes. Okay. So this is Miss Lily Taylor, and I've had the pleasure of teaching her last year, and I get to teach her again this year as I got promoted from fourth to fifth grade, and she's going to lead us into the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We do leader in me in my school with green binders. The first tab is myself. It's about your future career, what you want to get better at, hobbies, and etc. Second tab is my wits. Stands for widely important goals. Reading, writing, and math are the widely important goals. The third tab is my learning. It's work that shows how close I am to meeting my goals and the WICs. The fourth tab is my leadership in my WICs. Service project food drive every month, fifth grade, will be running that. Fifth tab is my celebrations. It's where you celebrate by meeting your goals and your wits.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Lily.
Yep. So, Lily, I don't know if you got something for you here. So.
Oh.
Your card.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lily.
Home so they can have dinner and
yeah, that sounds like a good idea, huh? Thank you very much.
Thank you. You did a great
job.
Thank you. Hi. We're also honored to have two recognitions this afternoon, so I'd first like to start with our student from Elizabeth High School, so Carly, if you don't mind coming on up. So, Board President Cartwright, I believe you have kind of a rundown of Carly and her recognition to go over before we invite her to talk a little bit about her experience.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations, Carly, and you are the first to be recognized this season or school year, new school year. The board would like to present you with this certificate of achievement and in recognition of exceptional steps you took to accept the challenge and opportunity as an intern at the governor's office at the state capital of Colorado. For your dedication to driving independently to the Capitol each week, navigating the complex dynamics of a large organization, representing Elizabeth School District well as productive, positive, and professional level contributor, and truly making a difference in the work that you did there, we commend you as a sterling representative of our community. So thank you very much. Certificate of appreciation.
Oh, that's so cool.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, thank you.
The leader and HDI.
That's so cool. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Can you guys turn this way? I think we had somebody go. Yeah, take a picture.
Oh, okay. 2 minutes. Thank you.
Carly, you mind sharing with us a little bit about your experience?
Yeah, absolutely.
What was, I guess, What did you enjoy the most about it? Yeah.
Well, briefly, I just wanted to say it's so good to see you all again. I'm so glad I had the opportunity to meet you back at the CASBY conference in December, which is so fun. And I also wanted to apologize for being dressed like this. So sorry about that. I just came from volleyball, and I'll have to hurry back to that after because we have our first game tomorrow, so that'll be super fun. But yeah, so I had my internship at the governor's office from, I think, March to May, or end of February to May. And may I say, it was one of the weirdest things I've ever experienced. Downtown Denver, you know, from Elizabeth, not really used to that. Definitely kind of a culture shock. But it was incredible to be able to see how many different people are down there and the different things that are going on in our state and the different issues that need to be addressed. And I kind of had an idea going into it, like, you know, government, like, that'll be super cool, I'll be super interested, but I had no idea how much of a difference one person can make. Like, I would answer these phone calls, and it would be people talking about all sorts of issues from, like, I don't know, there's this one lady who her children, they were having trouble at their daycare with, like, I don't know, just, they were getting home, sent home for being sick, and they had not been sick, and they didn't have a fever, and she had to go to work, because she was a single mom. And it was just a really bad situation, and I ended up just talking to her, because she actually came in first, like, in person. That was my first day at the Capitol. I was like, wait, I thought we were answering phones, what are you doing? And so she had her little boy with her, and he was running around, and she was just bawling and just didn't know what to do about the situation. And I just kind of sat there and talked to her while my boss, her name was Herosia, she was amazing. But while she was trying to get down her name and her number and try to get all of the information that we could pass it on to the governor and get her to the department that she needed to contact. And so it was just a really unique experience, and I'm so blessed and so thankful to have had it because I definitely grew a lot through it, and I have a whole new perspective on life and definitely government as well. So, yeah.
Awesome. So internships usually either make people, like, continue to ignite the fire for people to go into that position or that field, or maybe it causes them to stop and think, oh, maybe this isn't quite what I thought, and it's having either effect on you?
Well, I'm definitely still interested in pursuing law, or, like, at least, like, I don't know, I'm kind of thinking maybe broadcast journalism, too, because writing about everything that's going on, that would be super interesting as well. But I'm also kind of thinking marketing and business, so I'm kind of, like,
wow.
Because I don't know, there's so many things. But, yeah, no, it was definitely eye-opening, and to be able to, like, represent someone, like a citizen of the United States, it would be amazing to stand up for the people who don't have as much of a voice.
So Carly for governor someday, eh?
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay, she's got our votes.
I don't. I was going to ask your questions. Yeah, that's good. Okay. Yeah.
Well, good luck in the game tomorrow.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah. All right, congratulations. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Ooh. Ms. Hunt, do you want to come on? So it's my pleasure to introduce our principal at Rice Creek Elementary School. Ms. Hunt is going to introduce our final
graduation. I want to introduce JJ Gannon to you all. JJ has been a preschool assistant teacher in our building for how many years? 16, several years. And is now doing half-time assistant teacher and then half-time director of our preschool. So she just moved into that position this last spring, actually probably winter, and has just done a fabulous job and worked tirelessly this summer to make sure that our playground, our preschool playground, is renovated, which it is still in the process of renovation because we are having supply chain issues, but she has just been a godsend, truly.
That's awesome.
Very good. All right.
Thank you.
Well, I'm going to add to that.
Yes,
the board would like to present you with this certificate of achievement. I'll bring it up in just a second. JJ Van Eaton is an exceptional member of the Elizabeth District School District staff for her commitment to seeing that a new universally accessible preschool playground is available for Running Creek students. For your coordination from start to finish, writing two successful grant applications, which is awesome, working through through the summer of 2022 to plan and layout of the playground and timeline for installation, and communicating with vendors and contractors to greatly improve the play area for preschoolers. We commend you as a tireless exemplar of what drives Elizabeth School District. Students are at the heart of everything we do, so congratulations.
Thank you.
And
you gotta look this way. Yes, it's a picture.
Trying to get out of the pictures. Just a moment.
Jason, thank you very much.
Can you get one more, guys?
That's great.
Carrie, can I get one more?
Oh, for Jason.
All right.
Right here.
Yes. Okay, well, there were three. Not one.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you,
JJ.
That means a lot. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, we appreciate you.
Very much.
All right.
Whoop. Just throw them in.
All right, moving on with the agenda. Can I get a motion for the approval of the agenda? Additions, deletions, blanket motion.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Frumbeller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right, thank you. Can I get a motion to move into executive session? The board will meet in executive session to confer with the attorney for the board to receive advice on specific legal questions concerning compliance with Colorado Sunshine Laws pursuant to CRS 24-6-4024B. Roll call, please.
So moved.
Ah, thank you. It's first.
Second.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham.
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Frumpeller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Yes.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. We are now moving into executive session under CRS 24-6-4024B to confer with the attorney for the board to receive advice on specific legal questions concerning compliance with Colorado Sunshine Laws. And it is 6:13 p.m. And in the room we have...
Hang on 1 second. Do you want to keep everyone in the room?
No.
So just the board, please.
Yeah.
And do you want the superintendent to stay?
Yeah.
And myself.
Yeah.
And do you want Jason?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Maybe yeah. Some other things I want to pepper on, questions I want to pepper on with, so that we might not want to.
Okay.
Hi, Melissa.
Hi. Your arm is free.
It's doing better. It's not perfect, but it's doing better.
Water. The story about overflowing water bottles. All right, in the room we have with us. You want to start?
Melissa Barber.
Okay.
Kathleen and Ernest.
Okay. Kristen Harris.
Bill Dallas.
Kim Frumbeller.
Terry Karcher.
Rhonda Olson.
Craig Blackham.
Heather Booth.
Jason Hackett.
All right. All right, let's go ahead and get started. I know that we have a presentation package.
Are we on the record? Is the tape recorder going now?
Yeah, he did.
Okay, so I'm going to certify for the record that the following discussion will be protected by the attorney-client privilege, so you can turn the tape recorder off. Okay, so this is Melissa Barber, attorney with Kaplan and Ernest, again, certifying that the previous discussion was protected by the attorney-client privilege. Back over to the board president.
All right, and we are moving out of executive session. It is 7:24 p.m., and we'll be taking a five-minute break. All right, we are back in open session, and can I get a motion for the approval of the minutes from the Board of Education meeting August 8th, 2022.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Frumbeller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Yes.
All right. And
he's recording.
Yes, yeah, he loves. We need to be turned left alone. Okay, now we're going to communications, and we're looking forward to an awesome superintendent report. I know that there are a couple of things that were added, or at least one, right? So the floor is yours.
Yeah. So a couple of things that I'll try to move through with some rather quickly some information. So each year we need to complete a CDE assurances, and this is around evaluation protocol. Douglas actually completed this on June 24th before he left. I have a copy of them here. The board doesn't need to approve the assurances for the educator evaluation system, but I need to make you aware that we have completed them. We are making no changes to the evaluation system. The state statute doesn't require us to make any changes this year. We need to make changes next year. So this year it's still 50% of licensed individuals' evaluations are based off of data, and 50% is based off of the educator effectiveness rubric. Next year that will change, and there's the only laws that are on the books right now is data we can't use. So we can't use last year's like growth data for any standardized testing, because the year before that only half the kids took the test. So there's some information on what we're not allowed to use. Our protocols, from what Elizabeth has been using, can remain unchanged. What we are changing, so I do have a copy of them here. It's very boilerplate, but if anyone did want to take a look at them, I have them here from when Douglas sent them in. The one thing we are changing, and I included this in my my first bi-weekly or bi-monthly newsletter to the board, was the evaluation system previously was housed through an Excel spreadsheet that the board contracted with an individual. My understanding is this individual lives like in Fiji, I think, and created the Excel document, which is the exact same rubric that the state produced. So we didn't produce our own rubric, we just made it into an Excel document. The problem with that is over the course of a couple of years, different people using it, it's corrupt. And so we would either need to find somebody who would fix that, or we would need to go in a different direction. And we don't really have a lot of time to make that decision because of teacher evaluations. They start, you know, week one, basically. So we did decide, I met with principals, and we did decide just to go ahead and move forward with the platform being the state platform, which is RANDA. It's nothing changes except for the venue for which we use to enter data, and then Ken and his office will eventually have to pull data out and submit that to the state. And so we're not changing the frequency to which we evaluate, the what we classify as an observation, what metrics teachers need to meet. It's just changing the platform because we don't have anyone to fix the Excel spreadsheet, and this gives us a direction moving forward. So we do have to make a little bit of an adjustment based upon our COVID leave policy that I shared with you at the last board meeting. We're in a good position that we move forward with still honoring up to 5 days, but we did find out, as many districts did, that since we are still under a public health emergency that's set to be reviewed, to my understanding, in November, we are still required to provide up to 80 hours worth of COVID leave. Now, the tricky part of this is it's from day one of the public health emergency. So there are people who have already exhausted their 80 days. So instead of creating further confusion, our human resources department does have a record of who has already used. To not create any further confusion, we have communicated with principals and department leads to notify the Kin's office in the event somebody goes past their 5 days. So if they go past their 5 days that we are still giving to all staff, no questions asked, to meet their needs, then Kin's office will go back and see, did that individual already use an addition, like 5 days previous, that would be 40 hours. And if so, then they're done. And that individual needs to manage it amongst their own leave. And we still meet the 80 hours over the course of the whole agency. However, if it's a new staff member, if it's a staff member who has used no COVID leave previously, until we are told otherwise, or until the public health emergency has been lifted, we're still required to give them those additional 40 hours. So in that case, we would allow them to go beyond the 5 days. Okay. And again, that's, to my knowledge, set to be reviewed in November. I did provide a little bit of information regarding an electric bus grant to individuals in our document ahead of time, but I had some more information for you. If you didn't see in there, this is a slide that our Mark Russell's been using for a while. which, regardless as to, you know, whether or not we're even granted a grant and whether or not we decide to go in that direction, is still something that is needs to be on our minds, which is we have 69% of our fleet is at least 15 years or older. Mm-hmm. And we also have a very large chunk of buses that were purchased right here that eventually will all come to end of life at the same time. So regardless, we need to start, as a district, we need to start considering when particularly this chunk from 15 to 25 starts to starts to reach its end of life. That's going to happen at a not good time, because it's going to happen rather rapidly and rather quickly. And so a little bit more information on the electric bus grant. It was one that we were given less than 2 weeks to decide whether to apply for it. So it hit right in between our board meetings. We did ultimately decide, I did authorize for Ron to submit the application. We did verify beforehand that submitting the, and we have this in writing, that submitting the application is not a financial commitment by the district. If we are awarded the grant and we choose not to purchase the buses, we owe nothing. And it doesn't hinder us in any way in the event that the grant is continued in future years. Right now, there is no indication that the grant will be continued in future years. So what the grant does is it requires us to crush any buses. We have to decommission them. Any buses that one for one. So what Ron and Mark did is they chose our oldest, like most at the end of life buses, and submitted those as the five buses we would get rid of. We can't resell them. They will, like, the part of the grant is get them off the road altogether. So we submitted for five buses, which is $1,875,000 worth of buses. If we were offered the grant, then we would need to evaluate whether or not this is a direction that we want to go. We would have to look at whether or not there's any matching funds from the district. In the event that there were to be any sort of matching funds, so the way it works is the grant pays for up to $375,000 per bus. The cost of a bus depends upon the range of the bus. And so if we were to purchase buses that were $350,000, the grant covers the whole cost because it's up to $375,000. If we were to decide to move forward with this and we were to decide to purchase buses worth $400,000, then the district would be on the hook for the $25,000 that went beyond the $375,000.
How much is the average electric bus?
It depends on the range. For most of them, from what we're being told, if we don't try to exceed 100 miles to the charge, then we're under the $375,000.
Okay.
So I did submit some information, or I included, I think, to you that when Colorado was made aware of this, the Department of Energy, at the discretion of the governor, set aside $60 to $65 million in additional matching Colorado grants. The way that the governor described that was that in the event any school districts, because essentially what we've been told is this is a lottery. What we did is we put our name into the hat, and the federal government's going to pull names out of the hat. If we're one of the names that gets pulled out of the hat, and if the district then evaluates it and says this is a good decision for us, we're going to move forward, then we can apply to the state for the matching $60 to $65 million grant. So let's say that we purchased a bus that costs $400,000. Instead of the district paying $25,000, we can submit to the state to have that $25,000 paid for through the state matching grant. In the event that we don't receive funding for the charging station, then we can submit to the state to pay for the charging station. So the way that it's being presented right now is that it would be $0 and 0 cents to a district if they were to get this grant and if they were to decommission old buses and go with new buses.
Question is,
yeah.
Are mechanics able to work on those electric buses?
Not currently, but our distributor, Mark, I asked that to Mark Russell as well. Our distributor, which is most likely McCandless Shipping, is one possibility. I think that's who we've purchased other buses with. So they've already told us that they will, at no cost, send their mechanics out to train our mechanics on how to work on
them. Okay.
Yeah, that is a question I had. Rough estimate, and these are really rough. It was in the article that I sent everybody that came from, I think it was DPS, but it was a district in Denver, was that they're estimating about a 30 cent per mile differential to where the district is saving 30 cents per mile, an additional estimate of $10,000 a year on less energy. One big concern that we would need to look at would be the cost of battery replacement, which right now is estimated. The best information we've gotten right now is that about 100,000 miles, you would need to replace the batteries.
That's, and how much is the battery?
Right now, based upon current prices, which could go up or down, I would caution that we shouldn't just think that it would go down, because I do think we're going to see more of this hitting the market, is $60,000. To replace the batteries.
And what is the average cost to keep it charged, did you say?
I didn't have the average cost. I had the average savings that was worked out by DPS, which was an average savings of $10,000 a year. So, again, these are rough numbers, and you don't want to put much stock into them. And right now, thankfully, we don't have to, because we don't even know if we've had our name drawn out of it. But if we assume that 10 years and 100,000 miles in that 10 years, at 30 cents per mile and an average saving of $10,000 a year, we would save $650,000 for all five buses. Now, at that point in time, we haven't paid for a single bus, so we didn't write a check, we didn't pay a dime for any of those buses. So all of that $2 million is free. We would potentially save $650,000, and at that point in time, we would have to then potentially replace batteries. If they all hit at the same time, we'd have to replace batteries for five buses at $60,000 a piece. That's $300,000. So even if we don't include the zero cost of the buses, we would have still saved $350,000, and we'd have five buses at no cost to us. So
the grant for Colorado, from Colorado, is that, does that go out say in 5 years, where we could apply to that grant for the battery replacement?
They haven't gotten that specific yet. No. So we have to, if we were to move forward, we would want to move forward knowing with the presumption that when we hit 100,000 miles, we're spending $60,000 a bus.
Okay.
Yes. So the reason I directed Ron to go ahead and apply is at this point in time, we don't have any commitment and we don't need to make any decision. The earliest we were told we would know would be sometime early 2023. So the state isn't even releasing any process to apply. The way that the governor described it is, you, in order to apply for the state, you have to either be purchasing them on your own dollar or purchasing them through the federal grant. So in the event that we get notified that we received this grant, then I would come back to the board and we'd need to do a long-term study and contract with some vendors to find out exact pricing on buses, you know, all that sort of information to make an informed decision. Because it is a lot of money. It is it's a $2 million check that we received, plus all the other information. So I know buses were a topic that people had some questions about. Before I move on, I wanted to make sure that I answered them.
The state grants, will they be competitive grants, or will those be automatically gifted to those who win the lottery?
They didn't. There was okay. You have to have won the lottery or be paying for the buses out of your own pocket in order to apply for the state grant.
So then there's no guarantee that we would even get the state grant?
There is not.
Right.
So, so we would want to pay attention to whatever commitment we would have on the federal side for assurances to make sure that we can still change our mind if in fact the state were to come back and we were to get nothing, and then maybe we're on the hook for thousands of dollars and it changes the board's decision as to whether or not it's a viable investment. Because at that point in time, the district's investing money that we have not budgeted for, and it would have to go into our 23-24 district budget.
Okay.
So.
And I'm so sorry. Did you say how much it costs us right now for the buses over this period of time? Right, the buses that we have,
so
like for the
Mark,
fuel and everything?
Yeah, no, not for all of the fuel. Mark has done kind of the cost analysis if you bought a clean burning diesel bus. Honestly, if we, based upon Mark's analysis, I think we would probably find, if we weren't getting the buses for free, that it's better to invest in clean burning diesel buses still. But because they're like $100,000.
Right.
Don't have to replace the battery.
Right.
So the only reason that it, at this point in time, that the numbers could work out in the place to where it would make sense to go this route is because we would be paying nothing at all for the buses.
Right.
Yeah. In absence of that, Mark's recommendation was, is less confident that it would make sense to go in an electric decision.
Okay.
direction.
Okay. So, in a last meeting, executive leadership meeting, Mike Newton had indicated that he's been getting a lot of confusion over the current name of the department being Safety and Emergency Planning Department. So he's asked me for approval to change the name to the Department of Safety and Security. So just informing people of that name change. We haven't put that on anything moving forward, but he just felt as though it seems to make more sense. And the logos that he's purchasing, he did purchase the district vehicle that was budgeted in capital improvements. He was able to come in under what was budgeted, and the decals that he's designing or having.
Was that through the grant that he got?
No, that was the board approval for capital budget. What's that?
That was an MLO or just
no,
for
you,
the car?
Yeah, you guys approved that as a capital improvement.
A capital improvement.
Yeah, I think it was. I could go back and look. I think it was. He got what he got was used. I think it was $20,000 that the board approved, and I think he purchased it for $19,000. So, the two major thought processes, and this predates me, but the two major thought processes: one, he's putting a label on, like a decal on it that says District or Elizabeth School District Safety and Security, to increase his visibility, particularly at Singing Hills. He's also purchased some vests that he will be putting on when he goes into schools that says safety and security, trying to increase that presence. But then the other factor was right now, if we had to do a reunification, all of the totes and backpacks for unification would need to be loaded. They're already preloaded in his car. And myself and Mike and Ron have talked about, in the event Mike is not here at the district, then the second set of keys are being housed with Kristen, so myself or Ron can then jump into that vehicle and get straight to a school and be able to start marking out and have all the materials pre-planned. So those were some of the reasons I was told the district decided to move forward with the vehicle. You probably are going to hear quite a bit around restarting of accountability. So this year, we do have a law that causes us to restart accreditation and accountability. It was all paused due to the pandemic. There's going to be a lot of language around what is in the school performance frameworks or district performance frameworks, because the last couple of years are really in flux with what data the state has available. And then there's also laws that certain data can't be used in the school performance framework and district performance framework. The reason I'm mentioning it to you is it's the information I've been provided says that it's going to be using 2019 state performance targets. So the targets that the district would have been trying to hit in 2019, it's taking into account growth participation rates, which is 2 years ago we had half the kids take tests because that's the way that it worked out. So what did we reach, like getting, like try to get as close back to all kids as we could? Now there's still the opportunity for parents to exempt their children out, which we shouldn't be held accountable in that piece because we're not supposed to be. I don't actually know yet, and haven't seen any information on exactly how the growth participation rate is being calculated. I've been told that the district will receive the frameworks on August 25th, which is why I'm letting you know, and they will be public and no longer embargoed on Monday, August 29th. So it's a rather quick turnaround rate between when we actually get our eyes on them until they're made public. So we don't have any schools that were anywhere near any sort of accountability like clock or priority improvement. So no schools will go on to that based upon this.
What's the threshold for that?
I don't have it right in front of me. So elementary and middle schools, there is a law that says more of the school performance framework has to be based on growth scores than achievement scores.
Okay.
So the growth score being, did you grow at least a year compared to your peers? The achievement score being, were you at grade level expectation? So for middle school and elementary school, 60% of the school performance framework is based upon CMAS growth scores.
Okay.
40% is based upon CMAS achievement scores. So that gets you to your 100%. But then the state board sets, out of the 100 points, how many points is in each one. And so if I remember correctly, going back many years ago since I last looked at one, I thought that you had to have earned at least 50 points out of 100, or 50% of the possible points, in order to be at performance. And then there was another benchmark above that, which gets you to performance distinguished, and then below it would be improvement, priority improvement, and turnaround status. So I can share a sample one with you all.
Maybe that would be good.
The high school is different because the high school has a smaller amount for, because the high school factors in post-secondary workforce readiness, so it has three factors instead of two, and I don't remember exactly where the breakdown is on the percentages, but I will include the infographic.
Because when looking at the Colorado Department of Education, at our numbers seem pretty low.
Okay.
Are you talking the CDE assessments?
I can prepare some of that information. I've started pulling the reports down from Pearson, but they're still loading them. Right now I can't really get you something that is...
Okay.
It could change if I give you something today versus tomorrow.
Okay.
But I will bring that back for a future meeting.
How did, when you saw that, how did they stack rank with other districts?
I didn't really look at other districts.
I don't think they've gotten that far yet.
Yeah.
No,
I was looking at 2019 numbers.
Compared to that or...
2019?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and another good way... So comparing to other districts would be good, and then comparing to, like... Well, we only have two elementaries. The only place we have more than one school would be elementary. Comparing to, like, the district average, for example, would be another good way to look at it.
Right. It was giving you percentages of proficiency. And it just seemed like our numbers were low, but...
But I can bring some of that information back to you all.
That'd be good.
I wanted to report that I've had the opportunity to meet with our DAC chair, and we've restarted our district accreditation committee meetings, our first one September 21st. One of the big goals that we have, that I've talked to the DAC about, is increasing our parental participation by having some student representatives at the DAC. Once we have the configuration, then the board will need to bring it to you so you can approve the members.
Who's on the DAC? Is it several teachers from, like, each school or each department?
And what we go for is one parent, at least one parent and one teacher from each school. And then we have two DAC chairs. And I met with one of the chairs last week. And I...
Wendy Church.
Wendy Church.
Okay.
So what Wendy and I discussed is working with our DAC to develop parent and student climate surveys. The district last did those... The most recent, I've been told more recent, but the most recent one I've been able to find was in 2018. In a perfect world, what I would like to do is have it usable and provide good information. In my opinion, those sorts of surveys do a good job at giving you a picture, but not getting to root cause. So mm-hmm. then from the picture, you can do stakeholder meetings to try to dig down into the root cause. But if we do one in the fall and we don't change it and we look again in the spring, it helps to start to paint a picture over the course of time so we can see what's happening. So our DAC on September 21st is going to be the first thing. I have the one from years ago, and I also have some that I've used before. And so we're going to try to craft that together. And then in our meeting with principals, district leadership meeting, we are in conversations about potentially doing one at the staff level as well. But the DAC really doesn't like have as much input on the staff level as they would the parent and the student climate surveys. So, and as soon as I have some more information on like what those actually look like, I'd be happy to share them before we produce them. So I wanted to provide an update to let you know that I believe I've brought the situation where I was asked to look into district disciplinary protocols to a close. And so I have sent an MOU, which I do believe I provided you with that information. I think looking at that and comparing to best practices will increase our alignment with best practices and increase our transparency to the process. So I wanted to let you know we currently have an individual as the interim maintenance operations supervisor following the departure of our last supervisor, and looking at how many people are in that department, the fact that right now we're filling one with a part-time worker who most likely will probably not be with us when winter time comes around and we have to factor in plowing, we have gone ahead and we have posted that position so that we can hire and make a final determination, hopefully to then, depending on whatever that final outcome is, that we can then deal with any additional hiring that needs to happen and get everybody onboarded before we have to start worrying about salting and plowing and all the things that we won't be able to get to if we don't have that
department and fully staffed. So you may see a future, hopefully here, maybe even by the next board meeting, we may have an individual that we can recommend for hire. Back to the school has been a great start to the year. We have at 5:30 to 7 tomorrow, we have Elizabeth Middle School back to school night. And on September 8th, from 5 to 7:30, we have both Running Creek and Singing Hills back to school nights. Sports have started up practicing again, and we had our first standard response protocol training this morning, I believe, at in evacuation at Elizabeth Middle School as one of their practice drills. So those have started, kicked off as well. So. And I know I provided you with a lot, but that's everything I prepared for today.
So yeah. Maybe I missed it. The potential increase for hard-to-fill stipend on the agenda, it's the number one item.
You're right. Yes, thank you, Director Blackhorn. I believe that the district has previously authorized for hard-to-fill stipends up to $5,000. $4,000, thank you. Ken would like to ask for some additional discretion from the board to potentially increase that, particularly for special education positions. If you're not, one thing I should have reported on is we're not fully staffed at this point in time. We have 10 long-term subs in teaching positions. We have positions that don't even have long-term subs in them as well. And so Ken is looking for the possibility to increase the hard-to-fill position stipend and retention stipend so that he has more leeway to be able to offer some higher ones. And I think a couple specific ones that he's looking for is the retention of some of our existing staff members who are taking on a lot more of a burden to support the long-term subs and all those open positions that I just mentioned. To help to make sure is that we retain them. So it's not something we're asking for at this exact moment. We'll come back with an actual action item for you.
Well, and my question is, should we start looking at base pay, advertised base pay for these hard to fill? Mm-hmm. Because I know bus drivers, for example,
I've asked Ken to look at that as well, whether or not we need to create a different salary schedule. Mm-hmm. So he's working on analyzing that data as well to bring back to the board in the event that it seems like mm-hmm. a logical thing to do.
Okay.
Just a reminder, one of the things, and this is separate from hard to fill, one of the reasons that a lot of school boards will utilize their retention and attraction stipends is because the board has and the school district has a lot more ability to use them when available. And I agree looking at the base pay, but then once you commit to it's the difference between a reoccurring and non-reoccurring dollars.
Sure.
Stipends and retentions are non-reoccurring dollars. Adding to the base pay is a reoccurring commitment the district mm-hmm. will be making for the future mm-hmm. as well. But yes, we're taking a look at all of that to bring a variety of different options to the board to consider as you develop the budget assurances for the 23-24 school year and as you look at what you believe is in the best interest for our staff to make sure that we retain the highest quality staff. In a meeting that I had with CDE last Friday, they're at the point right now to where CDE's talent recruitment office has said if you have an individual who has graduated high school and will pass a background test and you're comfortable with them being in front of students and working with them, then we will get them a license because there are unfilled positions. Yes.
So should I just was a little concerned when Kim was talking about that we went from 13 positions needing to be filled the year before to 30, mm-hmm. that we've not implemented an exit interview process to mm-hmm. see what's really going on. Is it the money?
We're working on an exit interview right now. Yep.
Okay.
I wanted to make sure to make it as usable as possible. So Ken is in the process of drafting one and bringing it to our principal leadership group as well. And so we should have something put together that's, we can have people's eyes on, I would say, probably by the end of September, beginning of October.
Okay.
So what about the MLO funds? I mean, the first part of the MLO was to provide competitive compensation mm-hmm. in order to attract and retain staff, mm-hmm. teachers and support. How much of that is being used for?
I'd have to ask.
For the stipend, you mean?
Not even the stipends.
Oh, yes. For the salaries.
Actually being used for salaries. Mm-hmm. The first time we were able to use it, it went up significantly. Each one of the salaries.
You guys have raised the base pay mm-hmm. quite a bit.
Yeah. Are we competitive?
I don't know that is even something we can, you know. I mean, we're not getting any more money from the MLO. We've used the money from MLO.
Can we repurpose what we're using the MLO for?
No.
No.
So, we cannot.
No. Well, I can see some areas we can repurpose.
But according to the MLO.
Yeah, according to the MLO.
So, really?
Oh, yeah.
Let me start by bringing you back some numbers to know if there's anything available still. Mm-hmm. And I can bring that to our next board meeting.
Can we have an idea, just because I don't even realize, how much MLO money do we get? And then
1.5.
1.5.
That's what was
in
the budget.
And then what's going where? Like,
so there are a percentage breakdown. The part of that, I think 17% went to the charter school. And then beyond that, I don't remember exactly what percent, but the majority of it went to teacher staff or teacher salaries. Mm-hmm. Then a percentage of that went to the safety and security side of it.
So that would be nice to have those numbers of.
Can I tack onto that? Mm-hmm. So under the safety and security in the MLO, it talks about social and emotional support. Mm-hmm. We're spending money on social and emotional learning.
That was repeated on May 9th.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay. I don't know if those two necessarily equate. You've got social and emotional learning that is a curriculum, and it's under health and safety, where health and safety is talking about social and emotional support. I'm wondering if some of that money that we're putting in there can be pulled out and put towards teachers and salaries to get teachers in.
Well, like I said, first thing I think I need to do is I need to work with Ron to pull down the numbers and actually be able to provide you with an authentic, like a realistic picture of what we have to work with and what might be going unspent. And I can bring that back to the next board meeting.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. So just clarification, 1.59 million, you said. 86% would go toward improving compensation for teachers and support staff, and would include associated costs like district retirement contributions for employees and Medicare. The increase in compensation would be accomplished by revising existing salary schedules for these groups of employees, and I know we did that.
So teaching 86%?
86% of the MLO.
Okay.
Teaching staff compensation. Increases in compensation would affect all licensed teaching staff, including regular teachers, special education teachers, Title I teachers, counselors, and special services providers like audiologists, nurses, occupational therapists, physical therapists, psychologists, social workers, speech and language pathologists, etc. The minimum increase would be 10%. The starting teacher salary would be increased to $34,000. And at that time, this was 2018 when it passed. This is as of May. Yeah. 39 now. Right. And then, okay.
So do we have a breakdown of how much of this money is spent on psychologists and counselors and therapists versus what is actually spent on teachers and employees versus spent in social-emotional learning?
I don't have that breakdown right in front of me.
Okay, can you get it?
I will work on it, yes.
Yeah, teachers, $721,907. Counselors, $48,942. Special service providers, which is all of the other ones, $59,751. Classified staff, support staff, $197,000. And transportation staff, $53,000. And that it's 86% or $1,121,000, and then the balance, I believe, went to the charter school. And so here is the 2019-20 salary schedule.
Okay.
For this is what I referenced when we were talking about, you know, this is what we got, the information we got. And so we can copy this for
that'd
these guys.
Great.
It's actually saved in your board packet from May 9th, but I need to make a copy too.
Okay. No, if it's in the board packet.
Yeah. We can.
I'm pretty far over on my allotted time, but I'll finish with one thing, which is something that Director Blackham had asked me about. So something to be cautious about is going to be names of positions. And so a really good example of this in the consent agenda under new hires, Director Blackham had asked about what the title academic advisor is. Well, academic advisor is titled that because the high school was unable to hire a counselor, a certified counselor. So they were able to hire somebody who was in the process of that. So this would be a replacement for somebody who resigned last year. But until the individual actually holds the credentials, they have to call it a different name. So that person, once they get their credentials, will no longer be it would no longer be considered an academic advisor and will move to a counselor. So
and what does the counselor consist of? Is it just
at the high school
on
level, it's guidance counseling for
guidance,
those,
like
preparation for college or
okay.
Yeah.
So guidance on academics. Similar to it, so it's like the counselors they have now. There's like what, three or four?
Three.
Three of them.
Yeah.
So it's another one of.
No. So last year they had three. All three resigned. They collapsed down to two, but only were unable to hire any.
Wow.
So they contracted with an outside organization for one, and then had an applicant that applied that hadn't had their credentials yet for counseling.
Right.
So they hired the individual as an academic advisor, and he's working through getting his credentials. And once he gets his credentials, then he would be the second counselor.
Okay.
So technically the high school is down one counselor.
One.
From last
okay.
Year.
Yeah. So we just
from three down to two. One's contracted and one's hired. But the one who's hired is still working on their license.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes
so,
sense.
So please ask if you have questions about some of those titles, because we might have to do some of that when it comes down to working with certifications of people currently getting certifications and things along those lines. So,
okay.
Sorry for going over.
That's
all right.
That's cool.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
I'm not on a schedule.
Yeah. All right. So can I get... Thank you very much for the update. And it's really good to hear about the DAC... the DAC meeting on the 21st and
yes.
Working to come up with the climate survey. I think that's
yeah.
Really timely.
Yeah.
I know we've been talking about that for a while.
Yeah.
You know? So that's
yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. So can I get a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I think this is one I wanted to pull 9-1 through 9-3 out and vote on those separate.
So after I get the motion,
okay.
That's when you
okay.
Say, I want a motion to
okay.
Move them to the...
Okay.
Okay, and then I think I have to go back and get an approval of an amended agenda, or do I?
No, it just moves to action.
Okay.
You don't have
okay. To vote. Oh, okay, good.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
Yes, there's technically not a vote on polling.
Right.
That'll
right.
What once that is asked for,
right.
It'll
okay.
Go to action.
Okay. Okay. Cool. So, can I get a motion to approve the consent agenda items?
9.0 through 9.3.
Yes, thank you.
So moved.
Second.
Okay.
So now discussions?
No.
Not
so,
with consent.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Now you say,
mm-hmm.
I move to move items 9.1 through 9.3 to action items.
Okay. I move to have items 9.1 through 9.3 move to action items.
Okay, and then...
So now you would be
doing
consent on 9.4 and 9.5.
Correct.
Okay. So can I get a motion to approve the consent agenda items 9.4 and 9.5?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Okay. Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Funkfeller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. So I'm going to start with the action items we currently have, and then I'll move
okay.
To those. Okay. So can I get a motion to approve the school district employee discount resolution?
10.1.
Thank you.
So moved.
All right. Any... Oh.
Second.
You got it? Okay. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Frumfeller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Yes.
Director Wilson?
Aye.
Okay, 10.2, can I get a motion for the first and final reading of revised policies GCBD, Professional Staff Fringe Benefits?
So moved.
Second.
All right, any discussion? Roll call.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Frumfeld?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right, 10.3, can I get a motion for the first reading of revised policies ECAF use of video and audio monitoring and EAF R use of video and audio monitoring regulation?
Question.
Yes.
Sorry.
Motion.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion?
Oh, sorry.
Oh, that's all right.
So this is the reading, but we're not actually approving it because I was hoping we could get some explanation about the audio recording.
Yeah, it's listed on the agenda as first reading and final reading, so we'll bring it back.
All right.
We will bring it back as second and final or third and final. Or whatever. Yeah. All right. Now, 9.1.
Wait, you
didn't vote.
Oh, I'm sorry. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Trumpeller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
Okay. Now, 9.1. Can I get a motion to approve new hires and rehires?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion?
Yes.
Yeah. There was I've already expressed I'm concerned about what we're spending on SEL versus what we're putting towards our teachers who are actually teaching academics. I see a social worker in here. Is that being funded MLO or is that being funded grant or any idea?
I believe it's MLO, right? Okay. For the social worker.
Yeah. I just have concerns about, and
that's
again,
supposed to be going to teachers.
Well, I think there's some confusion as to it's right now social and emotional support is under health and safety.
Right.
But I don't consider SEL, which this is a part of, I'm assuming, I don't consider it health and safety, social and emotional support. It is a curriculum, a controversial curriculum at that. But I don't feel comfortable approving that with MLO money.
Is this where is the social worker? Is the social worker all the schools?
It says district-wide.
It's a district social worker. Just
three of them, correct?
There were three last year. Now there's two.
Yeah, right.
What are they?
And it's
what
really,
are they for?
I think it's more. Who was the person that came and presented us? Not the social worker, but
Tammy Krueger.
Yeah, and then this person reports to Tammy. Is that correct? Okay, and what is their role then? It's not specifically social and emotional learning as much as it is.
No, it would be, in a lot of ways, it's very similar to school psychologists. So they're working with students on a basis to identify individual needs of the students, develop plans for the students in the classroom to support positive behavior in the classroom, helping to connect resources from the community to the student or parents.
So is this just for SPED then?
No.
No. A school
psychologist.
Because
when Tammy came in, she was talking about...
Well, it's under her...
Yeah.
Her umbrella.
Purview.
Support services. Student support services. Okay. So especially... typically... A social worker can work with individuals on IEPs and be part of their case management. A school psychologist can also do that. A school psychologist will typically be more limited to working specifically with students with IEPs, where the school social worker can kind of flex between working with students with IEPs and students not with IEPs.
So we're using them to treat students that aren't SPED.
I'm sure that there are students on social workers' caseload who are not special education, but then there are also students who are in special education receiving service minutes through that process as well. So this is a staff member working with children, not necessarily like a career.
And it's not a new position. It's replacing one.
It's been around since the MLO in 2018.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was around before 2018. I would have to go back and do some research on that. That is pretty far before my time. But I can confirm that there were three district social workers last year, and there are only two this year.
All right. Any other discussion?
Well, if I could approve the other ones and not that one, I'm not comfortable with it.
Okay. Well, we just need, now that it's an action item, we need to take a vote on it.
Okay.
So, roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
No.
Director Frumfeller?
Yes.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Nay.
All right. Can I get a motion on 9.2 to approve transfers and changes?
So moved.
Second.
All right. Any discussion?
Well, Dean of Students position.
What is this person?
That's paid. Yeah. I know you said it was a restorative justice.
So, through the mill levy override, the school district has had I would have to double check. I believe at least 2 years. Behavioral specialist. And the behavioral specialist works with students who are having behavioral outbursts in the classroom, tries to develop a plan with the school and with the student to limit those behavioral outbursts. So it's disruptive behavior, not only to that individual, but to the other students. The district, that individual resigned last year. The district had that position posted for, I believe, 2 months with very little to no interest in it. And so what we decided to do was to, if you post something as like a behavioral specialist, you're attracting like this kind of these applicants. Mm-hmm. So we posted it as a dean of students to try to attract a different subset of applicants who wouldn't have applied for the behavioral specialist position. But to support with both, processing of student discipline at the two elementary schools, and to support with the same identification of students who are causing disruption in the classroom, and develop plans with the teacher, the student, and the parents to find replacement behaviors to limit those. Sometimes those replacement behaviors can be something like restorative justice, with the goal of keeping a student in the building versus suspending the student outside of the building. That would be kind of more of a case-by-case basis, depending upon what the behavior would be. But in general, the thought process would be to try to reduce the behaviors and to try to come up with consequences that both obtain the social integrity of the school, but also try to not have one tool in the toolbox, and that tool being suspension.
So we have counselors, we have social workers, we have whatever this is, dean of students, but it's really something else. Like, how many of these positions are we going to fill that is taking money away from our teachers? I just feel like it's so much money that, you know, we've taught. How much are we going to throw at this?
And these are all existing positions that we're filling. They're not new.
Right. I'm just saying, we're having such a hard time with teachers, and this money could go towards teachers.
Doesn't normally a principal handle the discipline?
No.
At least me growing up, that's why I'm going to the principal's office.
ideally, it would be my belief that we would want to try to limit how much the principal is focused primarily on discipline, because if this principal is focusing that much on discipline, they're not getting into classrooms. They're not supporting teachers with instruction and curriculum and best practices. That in itself is another deterrent that could have staff members leaving, feeling as though they don't have anyone coming into their classroom and observing them and giving them feedback based upon their instruction. And so in cases where there's nobody else but the principal, it becomes the principal's responsibility kind of by de facto. In places where the principal is not the only individual, then the principal is typically involved in situations that are of a high severity of nature, fighting drugs, things that might result in like further suspension or expulsion, but typically would not be involved in classroom disruption behavior.
Mm-hmm. How many students do we have enrolled in the district this year? Do ballpark?
1,800.
Yeah. So when we look at the, you know, for the two elementary schools, mm-hmm. I think Singing Hills is like 430, which they significantly increased mm-hmm. enrollment over last year and mm-hmm. over projections. Mm-hmm. Running Creek, not so much, not as much, but they did a little mm-hmm. slightly. But between those two, there's 700 students mm-hmm. plus, right? Okay. So, you know, I agree that we need to always take a look at or, you know, are we appropriating funding for our teachers, but also we need that support. And with one person between those two schools mm-hmm. taking care of, let's say there were only 10 behavioral mm-hmm. issues or problems, that's a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's something that we can just push aside, because that'll take away from the teacher in the classroom if they have to deal with the student.
Can the social worker not also handle some of that?
So there's different levels. A behavior specialist might work with the kid on coping skills mm-hmm. in the classroom. The psychiatrist is going to go deeper into what's making that kid tick. They're trained for that avenue. And both of those help, because when an incident happens in the classroom, it is so incredibly disruptive that perhaps 29 kids are ignored while the teacher's trying to take care of this one situation. So these different levels are differentiated to a great degree. And then the social worker then looks for outside agencies to be able to come in.
We have presented.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's different levels, and they're very diverse.
And then what about the counselors?
Guidance at the high school. Yeah. And so you would think they're the ones that kids go to talk to about their heart wounds. They're there to talk about what are you doing after college. And, right. and that a lot of counselors go in thinking that that's what it's going to be, helping meet the needs of specific mm-hmm. kids. But it really is guidance and where are you going after this. And that entails all the assessments that go along with that. So it's a very, very different job than what we're led to believe from TV.
Right.
Yeah.
See, I think what was problematic for me was the title, because people are like, we're four schools, why do we need a dean of students? They mm-hmm. don't understand what that title means. So, you know, I think if there was better communication about, you know, technically it's a behavior specialist that has nothing to do with this. This is what they do. I think that would be a better
fit. Mm-hmm.
It would go over better, I think.
I have had several parents say, we have a dean of students now. Like it was,
because
they don't understand.
Because in fact, it was so specific at one point. I was the dean of students, and I was just looking at attendance.
Mm-hmm. It usually comes, dean of students is just overall known as something else. Mm-hmm. So
Rue Belcher was mine at South High School when I was in high school.
Dean of students.
So, LaRue Belcher.
Wow.
Yeah. All that, I got in trouble.
I was going to say, you must have gotten in trouble.
Well, just a couple.
Okay, so that helps me.
Yeah. The explanation helps.
Yes, very much so.
Okay. All right, thank you. Roll call, please.
Director Lacko?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Fonbrother?
Yes.
Director Kircher?
Aye.
Director Austin?
Aye.
All right. Can I get a motion on 9.3 to approve employee separations?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion?
The only discussion I had, I think we talked about earlier, was knowing why they're leaving and knowing if maybe there was some compensation or something that we could have done to help retain. Because I'm just concerned about losing staff and being able to get people.
You know, I kind of did a check. That's a good point. And so I think the climate survey outside, but also inside, and then exit interviews mm-hmm. will help with that. But I talked to a friend of mine that is part of the Jefferson County School District. Mm-hmm. He's a principal at one of the schools. Mm-hmm. And their turnover mm-hmm. was outrageous. I can't even believe it. It's not even close. I mean, we should be... I'm not happy with it because 30 probably is what we've experienced in prior years, and we were very fortunate over the last 6 or 7 years to not have a high rate of turnover, and it got better every year, and especially after we had the MLO passed in the district, because there was no additional tax for the constituents, which was really awesome, and because we had gotten rid of the bond, we paid off the bond for the high school, so there it was a net. So, but anyway, to make a short story long, CHEFCO really has they're having challenges, mm-hmm. and they've had to double up on classes. They've had to, and I mean 60 kids in a class mm-hmm. in some cases.
I think we're going to get some information over the course of this year that can act as a benchmark for us to compare our metrics to in the profession. Every article I read right now is talking about the largest exodus of teaching yep. in the profession that has ever existed. Yep. And so I understand the need to want to dig in further, and I think it's good work to be doing. And I think during this year, not only will we be doing that work, but I think we're going to see the release of information that we can use as a standard to weigh ourselves against to see, are we kind of what the whole profession is seeing? Right. Are we a little bit better? Are we a little bit worse? And then, use some of that information to dig down further into what can we do. Yes, right. Exactly.
Because yeah. Douglas County, they're getting ready to try and get a MLO as well and to raise their teacher pay, which makes this even harder for us. So that's one of the concerns I have over there as well.
And I think those are also good topics to bring about again when we work on budget assumptions for the 23-24 budgeted option. Because, the money that we're talking about right now is actually already been allocated in the 22-23 budget based upon those assumptions. But when we start working on the mid-year budget adoption, we start developing those budget assumptions, I think it'd be another good time to bring this conversation back around. And by then, hopefully we'll see some fruits of our labor and have some more meaningful data to provide for you when having that conversation about budget assumptions.
Okay. I know insurance played a role mm-hmm. in some separations.
Yeah, I saw that.
Kaiser, moving to Kaiser. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, a roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Kronfeller?
Yes.
Director Kreacher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. Okay, we're going on to discussion items. We have one important, I think, very important item, and that is the superintendent search process. So
if I can interrupt, I'm actually going to accuse myself for the rest of the conversation.
All right.
I'll be in the office in case or anyone needs me until the meeting concludes. But based on the conversation you all are about to have, I want to make, even though it's an open record, I want to make sure as though my presence as a potential applicant doesn't cause any sort of change in the conversation.
Yeah,
I just want to make sure that that's honored.
Okay, cool. All right. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
All right. I'm a text away.
Okay. Cool. Or a holler.
I'll probably hear you if you holler.
Okay. All right. So just a little bit of an update. I think you all receive the two packages or proposals from McPherson and...
I see him in the agenda, but I didn't see him. I didn't recall seeing him before.
You don't? Yeah, okay. Okay.
In the discussion folder.
Yeah, in the discussion folder.
We didn't receive an email on him. No. It wasn't an email. It was just saved into the public or the...
In the discussion?
Part
on the agenda?
Yeah.
Okay. So there, just to talk about this, there are two search firms that... we have requested a proposal from. They have submitted proposals, the two search firms, and they are pros at finding superintendent searches. Mm-hmm. And they're both, they both have some things in their proposals that I think we all might kind of leave fingernail marks in the pavement on the way to that meeting a little bit. But, mm-hmm. but we direct, the board of directors directs what approach they take, mm-hmm. what the job will look like, what the job description will look like, and who we want as our superintendent. Mm-hmm. So what I would propose that we do is we take a, first of all, take a look at these two, and we can add another or a couple more, but that we actually interview the search firms.
Okay.
That we as a board have a special meeting and the week, sometime the week of September 19th, if that works for you guys. And then when we do that, then we will have a special meeting. We could then make a decision based on what we find in that interview process, who we want to go with. Or if we don't want to go with any of these people. But then we're all involved in this. We will have a couple of weeks to prepare our questions. And then you did a great job of getting the job descriptions out, you know, the current job descriptions, and then us providing feedback and really taking that information, I think, is the best way to do it. You put together... I have it here somewhere. Do you have a copy for everybody?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. All right. Kind of a cheat sheet, a little bit on what it should look like. And actually, it's where did you get this? Oh, okay. All right. So, this is the superintendent. Does this also include the? Yeah, here it is on towards the back. The 2022 superintendent selection process and task analysis on the, that's like, I don't know, how many pages back? Third page. This one? Okay. All right. And so I was looking at this and I really like it. And this came from then from kind of an outline of Douglas also. Douglas
County. Yeah, somewhat. Okay. It's a
okay.
Tweaked it far.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so the only thing I would look at here and say, okay, charter school principal, because they're not associated with us at all. The only thing we do is pass through. We're their pass through for funding. They have their own board. They have their own.
They don't work together at all.
No, okay. They don't. It's really. I mean, it's. It's totally separate. And I think that's really, I think it, how it is, except Douglas County, do they run or manage their school, their charter schools?
I don't think they do. I think they're the same as us. The funding goes through.
Or they go through, they're managed by, there's a
management company.
Colorado charter school, something that where districts won't. Support charter schools that you know they'll go out but they have their own board. We just pass through everything. It's like we were talking about MLO 17%, boom, goes to them. That's how we like to do it. So I would propose that, and we can discuss this, but we set up the two or three presentations that we read through their initial proposal and prepare our questions for them, and then we do an interview with them first, and then we'll select one. I can tell you that I think when I was reading through McPherson, they basically do the same thing, right, as far as nationwide recruiting, local and nationwide, but theirs is 13,500. Ray and Associates is 20,000. So if they're doing pretty much the same thing and they both have the very similar reputation and we can drive the process, that's I really want to stress that. We drive, we're in the driver's seat on what we tell them to look for and to recruit.
So are we able to, all the applicants don't have to go through them, do they? Is probably my biggest question.
I think. Are you worried about not seeing applicants?
No. Well, no, not necessarily. I just meant, you know, I have a lot of friends in education. I've kind of put the word out, whatever. And so I didn't know, will they still be able to just come directly?
Are they actively looking? Because if they're actively looking and they meet the criteria that we end up coming up
with,
they'll... they will seek them out. Yeah, like if
these are some that might come out of retirement, or we're thinking about, like, there's some different ones. Yeah. Who I just was curious, so they would just then contact that one.
I think it would be better for them to go through this, so
okay.
it's
non-biased.
Yeah. Not right.
Okay,
right.
So then if anybody comes across, I say contact.
Yeah, Joe we're Schmuck, hey, we've contracted with whoever to do our search for us, and please contact them. And I don't know for sure, but they charge us; they don't charge the applicants.
Right.
So yeah. So I don't think it would cost them.
I think that would be the best avenue, because again, I mean, then you don't have to recruise yourself or anything like that. I mean, yeah. Completely.
So,
unbiased.
But we would get to the. My biggest thing is I want to make sure through whichever company we picked up, we get to see all the applicants that they're not. I mean, all the applicants that meet our criteria.
Right.
That they're not screening as far as anything past what we're putting in front of them.
I think, yeah.
No,
right?
They're going to screen them based on what we tell them.
Our criteria.
So they'll say, you know, if we say, I want, you know, every person to have purple hair.
Right.
If they don't have purple hair.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
But if they have purple hair, but maybe they have green tints, you know, they're...
Right. I know. I'm like, this is okay, going wrong.
No, but I think the requirements that we put down, once we figure it all out, then, I mean, they'll go by that.
Right. I just want to make sure that we, like, if we end up putting a committee together, whatever, I don't want somehow people to get weeded out because...
I can understand your concerns. I deal with that with hiring all the time when you, yeah.
You know, we just depending on the type of firm they are. Right. I know most of them.
Yeah.
I just want them, it should reflect the views of our community.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in here, it does, in what you provided, representation from all four schools. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Number of teachers. You know, we would need to, once we were prepared to talk to these guys and do the interview process and we're prepared to select, then we would tell them, okay, we're going to have a teacher from each school. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a number of classified employees from each school. We're going to have a number of
parents and
community members. We're going to have communications, finance, whatever.
Right. Right.
Again, we're driving the electric bus.
Okay.
Better at charge day.
Well, yeah, really. Yeah.
Speaking of charging, I am hitting an absolute wall from my 5:30 flight. Sorry,
that's all right. Okay, so are y'all good with that? Mm-hmm. This go forward. Okay, good. All right.
No.
Since you're all here, can we look at a date?
Yes. Yeah. Probably. Good thinking. I already had it pulled up, so.
So the week of the 19th, when you said earlier, I have something going on every single day because my daughter's getting married on the 24th.
Okay.
So that's the only problem I have.
In the evenings,
so
you have some?
Would after, like the...
Well, what about like the 18th?
Yeah. September 18th, Sunday? Is that too close?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, guys. I'm going to be stressed out to the max because it's at my house. I mean, if it was at a venue, it'd be a different
You're
story.
You're having the wedding at your house.
Yes, ma'am. So I have everything scheduled that whole week for bean delivery and set up and everything. So
what about the week
of the
16th? Yeah.
The wedding's the 24th.
Okay, gotcha.
So, September 12th we have a meeting. Don't we have a meeting here?
Yeah, and I'm not going to be here. I won't be back.
So,
until
we
the
could push it out until after the 24th, then I would be very happy.
Do you want to do the 27th?
If that's the case, you have a board meeting on the 26th.
So
you could just do it during the board meeting.
Yeah, we could do it.
Oh, we could do it. On
We could interview them.
Yeah, I will
start early or what?
Well, you can't have them at the same time.
No.
Let me work with Ken to make sure that they're available.
Well, we're going to tell them.
No, but I mean, timing-wise, what time?
Okay.
And then we can just work it into your normal schedule meeting.
Okay. All right. I'm cool with that. Are you okay with that?
But aren't we going to have our meeting to discuss what we want to have the requirements?
Well, this is a special meeting, right? We were going to do a special meeting to interview the...
just to talk to them.
We're just interviewing them. We're not giving them what we want yet. We're interviewing to pick who we want.
Okay. Right, to represent us.
So we could do that on the 26th?
Yes.
I'm good with that.
But you wouldn't... Okay. You wouldn't... well, I guess you could. You could vote in that session what firm you wanted to contract.
I would think so.
How much time do you think? Let's say we have just these two.
I think...
Half hour?
Each. If we're prepared.
Each?
Yeah.
We're going to give them a half an hour each.
If you guys want to start early, I see about getting up early.
Okay.
You guys
I think that might be beneficial to start at 5 so we're not
I'm
here
off
so
on
late.
Mondays.
Okay. Yeah. So do we not want to see 20 minutes? You think they need a half an hour? I'm just asking.
We just don't know. What if we have a lot of questions?
Okay.
20 to 30 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that would be fair. Okay. Yeah. If they summed up earlier beforehand. If
yeah. And if we're prepared and we've kind of, you know, they know.
Okay.
So I think all of us, if we can work on what we want to ask them and stuff and be prepared, that would be good.
Sure. Okay.
Okay, so we could start earlier?
Yep. Okay. I'm going to shoot for 5 p.m.
I put that in my...
Firm. I'm good with that.
Perfect. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're fine. Go ahead.
Want to talk about qualifications? Like, when you want to discuss what we want for qualifications?
Oh, well...
I was just going to say, so I got the feedback that everybody received, and I put it into one document.
Okay.
And part of the search firm, and Kim can talk about this at the September 12th meeting, but part of the search firm will be giving all of the qualifications together.
Okay.
And then they will then, that's what you're paying them to do, make it look pretty and make it look like a job description. And you guys can go through. But I basically have it in one document right now, which I can share with everyone.
Okay.
If you want to add to it or take away
from
it.
We can go ahead and leave off they don't have to smell or taste. Is the one thing I think we could probably leave off that.
Is there something that I...
Are you serious?
Uh-huh.
I think that was in the 2012 one. Because I think that's the one that actually had, like, you have to be able to lift, like, 5 pounds or something like that.
But it also, you have to be able to smell and taste, and I'm like...
That's funny.
After COVID, that might not
that
be a...
legitimate.
Right?
Yeah.
That might be an issue.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
So you can send out that document sooner than later, I think, to everybody, so we can have time to look it over.
Okay. All right. Very good. Next board meeting is September 12th.
Yeah.
Will everybody?
Yep.
I will not. Kim will be running that meeting. My pleasure.
Yeah.
All right. I will be
the pressure of the agenda.
Yeah, gosh, I will be in Paris having dinner with my uncle.
Rub it in a little.
Wow.
He lives in France, and I haven't seen him in 30 years, and so he's going to drive up from where he lives to meet us.
So we'll have croissants here.
Hell yes.
I want chocolate.
All right. With that, it is 8:42, and this meeting is adjourned.